I was suicidal every day. My self-awareness, self-worth was on the floor. I was always letting people down. I felt like there was nowhere to turn. I felt like I exhausted all avenues out there for help as well. I honestly thought I was a gambler for the rest of my life, and I was either going to kill myself or I was accepting that.
Today's podcast guest is Colin Brown, and he shares his story of gambling addiction and recovery and the advocacy work that he's doing today to help other gamblers in the same situation. But before we dive into his story, I do have one favor to ask from you. There's so many of you that watch this channel regularly, but you haven't yet subscribed. If you do me the favor of hitting that subscribe button, then my promise to you in return is that I'm going to continue to work hard each and every day to spread the message that gambling addiction is real.
Got started with gambling when I was 15. Kind of had a nice upbringing. Had a hard-working family. My dad had his own business. My mum kind of looked after the kids. We kind of got everything we wanted. We weren't really well off, but I didn't really want for anything. Just had a paper round as a young boy, and we went down to the amusements one day and basically doubled my paper round money that day. And I remember not wanting to play the machine at the time, but my pals were like, oh, I just play it, it's going to pay out. And it was old style kind of amusements where if it had been played a lot, like the coins got full and it would pay out. So I won, like I say, I doubled my money. And the feeling I got, I remember that day, I felt high as a kite. I was just buzzing. And I think initially I got that real dopamine release that we get when we gamble, and I couldn't wait to go back down and do it again.
Well, what's the perception of gambling like where you're from? Is it something that when you were 15 and you were getting involved like that, was it already something that most of the people around you were also kind of doing?
So that was like about 27 years ago. So I was, back then it was just amusements. The bookies were nowhere near as popular as they are now. It was kind of seen as an old man's kind of thing to do. You'd maybe go for the pub to the bookies. It wasn't obviously as accessible as it is now. So, but it was natural that I progressed from the amusements to the bookies because I loved sport. I absolutely loved sport. I loved the competitive nature that sport brought. I kind of played all sports myself, so I loved winning. Obviously, when you get the opportunity to bet on it, you think your ego takes over. You think you know better than everybody else. So I would be like, this is heaven, I could bet. And once you start winning, again, your ego takes over. You think you can make a living doing it. And obviously, that's not the case because everything you bet on the house has got the favour.
Now, you said bookies, and there's a portion of the audience that might not be familiar with exactly what that is. Where is it that you're from, and what are the bookies, just like broadly? What kind of bets do they offer?
So I'm from Scotland, and the bookies are basically the bookmakers. So that's where it's like betting shops. So you go in to write your slips out for horses, dogs, football. There's roulette machines in there called fixed odds betting terminals, they're called. And it's basically like, it's mini casinos, it's like roulettes and slots. And that's where, obviously, highly addictive products that they've got.
And the gambling age there is 18?
18, aye.
18. And so did you wait until you were 18 to start going to the bookies? Or was it like pretty soon after those initial experiences when you were 15?
No, I think I was 17 when I started going to the bookies. It was kind of, it was just what you done on a Saturday. Everybody played football, soccer to you guys, and you would go to the bookies before you went to your game. And then after the game, you would check all the results, and it would just be like everybody would do it. I've played football for 25 years, and I can count on one hand the amount of people that don't gamble.
Really? So that was the opposite of my experience, I think. In 2017, when I was starting to do my sports betting, I was kind of like the odd one out, me and a couple of my friends, for gambling so much on the sports. Whereas now I feel like it's shifting towards what you're describing, at least in America. It's like more people are gambling on sports than ever before. You know, at what point does it start to kind of become a problem then? Because it sounds like it could have been pretty fun in the beginning with your friends.
I personally think that my problem was pretty quickly, because from winning that money, I'd be back down the next week. It wasn't the next day, but then eventually it was pretty much the next day, and then you were going down during the week, and then I started stealing out my mum's purse and my mum's vase that she had in the kitchen. So I wasn't intending to take that money. I just wanted to take it so I could win more. And then when I did win more, I'd put the money back. But then when I lost, I had no money to put back. So then it was like, I'm going to get caught. And then I think my mum didn't want to believe that I was stealing from her. As gamblers, we justify why we're doing it. So I was like, my dad's doing well, his business, so it's okay, £20, nothing. But that was just the way that gambling makes you think. It just takes over your brain, hijacks your brain.
Yeah. Well, so you told me before the call that your last bet was on September the 13th of 2023, which means that there was a lot of gambling between the point that we're talking about now and that point. You know, take me through the progression. When did it become all-consuming? Because you say right away you're already starting to take some money from family to sustain the gambling. Walk me through the progression of it from there.
I was 18 year old when my mum recognised I had a problem. Obviously, she had realised I was stealing. I was getting letters through the post. I was taking days off my work to try and intercept the post. I was getting bank charges. I was taking loans, credit cards, doing anything to get money. Mum obviously recognised. She says, you need to go to GA. So that was when I was 18 years old. Back then, that was year 2000. I walked in the room and there was only two other guys there. So it was like really small scale, two older guys who, like I say, were kind of old school bettors. But I've went throughout the years, I'm mostly skipping a bit of my story, but I've went back to GA and there's been like 30 people in the room. And there's probably even more than that now. So it just shows how the problems escalated, and obviously the accessibility, the advertising around it adds to that.
Yeah, it definitely has increased. When I was going to meetings more regularly, I was starting to see younger and younger people coming in. When you went into those first meetings, the fact that the two men that were in there were so much older than you, did that feed into kind of the belief, like, oh, I'm not like them?
Aye, definitely. I kind of thought, to be honest, I didn't really want to be there at that age anyway. I thought I was just being unlucky. As I went back throughout the years, I was like, look, this is a problem. But then it just wasn't an avenue that was working for me. It was kind of reaffirming the fact that I was a compulsive gambler and I was powerless over gambling, which I believe now I'm not. I believe now I've got control over my gambling because of the controls that I've put in place, and I'm powerful over gambling, not powerless.
I like that reframing. I'd like to dive into it a little bit more as we get towards the latter part of your story and getting into recovery. So coming out of these meetings as you're young and you're seeing these older people, you're not feeling like you can relate to them yet. Like, they're gambling, they have gambling problems. I don't. I just got unlucky. Do you keep gambling while telling others around you that you're staying away? Like, what's happening after that?
I felt like I was obviously being honest at the meetings, and sometimes I was still gambling and sometimes I wasn't. But as soon as I'd leave the doors, then I was back into the basically secretive gambling that Colin done. I think my recovery this time, it's been honest about my whole, to everybody about my problem. And I think doing that, you don't become secretive. But I'll tell you a bit more about my kind of how it developed with that. So I kind of, obviously, I was just going through the same cycles. I would go to GA, I would stop for a week or two, I would stop going to GA, then I would start gambling again, I would start being deceitful, I'd start letting down partners, I would just so much lies. I kind of just needed to look at different options. So I went to counselling, I seen a psychiatrist, and somebody across from me that wasn't relatable. It was kind of like, felt like it was reading off a piece of paper, going back into my childhood, whereas I didn't believe that in my case, in a lot of people's case, a childhood might be what triggers them, but in my case, I didn't believe it was. So, and another thing that I try and stick to nowadays is living in the moment. Obviously, I'm aware of what happened in the past, but if I dwell on the past, I'll never move forward. So I think you need to live in the now, because that's the only way your future will get better.
I agree with that. And I think that's been the experience of a couple people that I've spoken to as well, of like, and myself included, not really understanding or not feeling a connection to the therapy, to the therapist themselves. In my case, it was because the therapist was like very skilled at talking about traumas, about helping people to recenter themselves, meditation, that kind of thing. But he never gambled before. And so in my case, I was like, dude, like, I feel great walking out of here, great enough to go and start spinning slots after our sessions. Like, it just didn't work. And so, you know, I think that to an extent, I was using it as like an excuse to continue the gambling back then. Like, oh, he doesn't get it, so it must not be the problem. It must be something else that's my problem. Do you feel like there was any of that in there? Like, as you were working with the therapists, the focus was kind of off?
Aye, there was definitely an element of, I just hadn't found what I needed, so I was using it as an excuse to go back gambling. As my gambling got worse, it obviously progressed. I got big wins and stuff. And then the gambling, it went from betting maybe the smaller stakes. They weren't giving me the dopamine buzz that I was craving. So you were needing to do the high stakes to get that feeling. And that's when it obviously goes out of control and you start getting in serious debt and real problems. And you end up betting, like you're betting on sports, not for the enjoyment, just for the kind of feeling. So sports like tennis, which I'd enjoy watching on the telly, I wouldn't be watching that. I would be staring at my phone, watching each point on the Bet365 app or whatever, or watching dangerous attacks at the football instead of watching the actual game for enjoyment. There'd be times when I would have bets on as well, and maybe my team was, I remember one time I had a team, I was waiting on them for a lot of money, and they were 3-0 up after 10 minutes. So the bet was basically in. And I hated it because I wasn't getting that buzz that the bet. So I was like choking to get another bet back on. But wow, that didn't make sense, Ken.
I've heard of that with like slot machine players. Like when they hit a bonus round, it disrupts the flow. It disrupts like the dopamine, the enjoyment of it, because they have to wait to find out what the result of the bonus round is. But I've never heard someone say it with sports. So talk me through it. So you're seeing that your bet won. Theoretically, anyone that's watching this that's not addicted to gambling is like, he should be happy, right? Like, what were you feeling? Like, it's this frustration? Like, God, I wish it was more exciting? Like, what's it like?
I know, you know that you're getting this sum of money at the end of the game, but then it's like, I didn't want to wait to the end of the game. I want it now. So that's when you're straight depositing more money into the account and betting on anything. Like, a lot of gamblers are the same. Can you bet on table tennis and volleyball and kind of pretty much every sport out there I've bet on. I remember betting on a table tennis guy and I was chasing my money and clicked on to watch the match, and the guy was about 75-year-old.
Wow.
The guy that I bet on, and I was like, oh, can the bet? That just shows how desperate you are to get money back. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that same kind of feeling when I was able to stream. It was like Balinese basketball league, and I had like whatever team was from, it was Indonesian basketball, but it was the team from Bali. And when I opened it up and I saw them playing, I was like, I just bet on like a high school basketball game. I was like, oh my God, this is terrible. So I can very much relate to that. But let's steer back into the narrative arc of the story here. So things are progressing. You're starting to gamble on things that you don't even like. You're just trying to keep the rush going. You're trying to keep the thrill going. How old are you at the point that it kind of reaches its peak?
I got really bad probably a year and a half, 2 years before I stopped. Maybe I was about 37, 38. Finally, like throughout the years, I didn't really settle down with girlfriends because I'd always run away when it came close to them finding out about my gambling. I would just make an excuse to leave. And so I eventually settled down and bought a nice house and stuff. And my gambling was totally on top of me. I was banned for everywhere. I was banned for all the shops. I was banned online, but I was getting friends to put on bets. There was a guy down in England I'd never met before in my life. I was transferring him large sums of money to put bets on for me.
Really?
So that kind of I'd never met the guy in my life. So it just shows that we would do anything to get a bet.
How did you meet this guy? Like, what was the process like of that? You never met him, but you're sending him sums of money. Is he like a bookie? Is he fielding bets? Like, who was he?
No, so I was on Facebook and I play pool, kind of like American pool. Sure. And there was a group basically for pool people, and this guy was like, I'm the bookie. Can just screenshot, just say Bet365, the odds on a tennis match, for example, and I'll give the odds and you transfer me the money, then you'll keep a balance. So I ended up working my way up to a large sum of money with the guy. So I was like, right, transfer it back to me. And he was like, oh, my bank's not working. Can he, all the excuses under the sun. And I was like, this guy's done me. I was what I go down to, I think it was like Sunderland where he was from, to like go to his door. But
wow. Struggling with an addiction can make you feel like you're all alone. But trust me, it doesn't have to be that way. At Right Choice Recovery, a family-owned and operated treatment center in New Jersey, we are here for you. And we're dedicated to helping you break free from addiction and change your life for the better. Whether you're struggling with substances or a gambling addiction, this is the spot for you. With personalized care, real support, and a team that understands exactly what you're going through, we're here to walk with you on your journey to recovery. Because recovery is possible. And it all starts with the right choice. Check the description of this video today for more information.
So you reached the point where you were willing to just bet with anyone that was giving you access. And when you say banned, you mean you had self-excluded, like you had banned yourself from these places?
Aye, I'd self-excluded. I'd done the Moses scheme, which is basically ban yourself from all the shops, but it doesn't work. The girls behind the counter or the guys behind the counter, they're on minimum wage, so they're not going to stop an angry gambler. They're not going to tell you to leave. It doesn't happen. It doesn't work. And that's one of the things that with the Gambling Act, it's like they think that these things work or they say that these things work, but they clearly know that they don't. There was actually a documentary in the UK I think a journalist went out last week. Or no, it was last month. He banned himself for 14, I think they were like amusement places, and 13 out of the 14 let him in the next day after he banned himself. So it just basically says what I'm telling you, it doesn't work. So it's these sort of things that I think we need to focus on to try and iron out. There should be face IDs, or like if I go to the gym, I need to put a unique code into the gym to enter the gym. I'm banned for gambling. I didn't want to gamble ever again, but I know that I can gamble today if I want to. And I don't think that's acceptable. I think the players deserve, or people that are willing to say that they've got a problem, which as a big thing on its own, they deserve more protection, I believe. At this stage of my story, I was suicidal every day. My self-awareness, self-worth was on the floor. I was always letting people down. I felt like there was nowhere to turn. I felt like I exhausted all avenues out there for help as well. I'd been to the doctors a number of times. They would give me depression tablets, but I would be sent to the doctor, look, I'm no depressed. Gambling's, I'm obviously depressed because I've no money, but that isn't the problem. The problem is my gambling. I need to get on top of it, or I need to get someone that helps me beat gambling. And I didn't believe that I was going to do it. I honestly thought I was a gambler for the rest of my life, and I was either going to kill myself or I was accepting that. I think if I had bigger balls, I would have taken my own life, but thankfully I didn't. I just feel like the whole mental health in general, it's kind of, you're kind of told it's okay to feel, to be not okay. And I believe that kind of sending out that message is almost telling people it's fine to be feeling down and feeling sorry for yourself. And then 10 years down the line, it's okay to still be feeling sorry for yourself. Can I think we need to get to our end goal? Like two years down the line, like for example, if you go to meetings and then 2 years down the line, if you're still in the same place, then where's the progress? And I believe the kind of recovery that I'm on and the app that I'm building should try and rewire the brain into thinking differently and ultimately building a healthy recovery.
I think it's really interesting what you said about how you were feeling depressed, so they were giving you like tablets. Yeah, and you were feeling depressed because you gambled away all your money. I went through the exact same thought process. I was told that I had depression and that I had anxiety. And I never went on medication for it. We tried to fix it through like meditation and stuff like that. But thinking back, I was like, yeah, I had both of those things, but they weren't causing the gambling. The gambling was causing me to feel those two things. It was like they were saying, you're gambling because you're depressed. I'm like, no, I'm depressed because I'm gambling.
And, aye, 100%.
Yeah, that's exactly the same thought that I went through. And I think that this it's okay to not feel okay thing, it's probably just becoming popular because it's the direct opposite of what it was before, which was like push everything down and never feel anything. So I think the correct path forward is probably somewhere in the middle, which is making progress.
No, I do agree. I mean, it's certainly okay to speak out, or it's kind of, I would advise people to speak out because it obviously makes you feel better, connect with people. And if that means going to support group meetings, talking to family, just being honest with people, it makes you feel better. So I would absolutely encourage you to speak out, but don't like sit on the couch and feel sorry for yourself, because you will not get better. Like if I get tablets to the doctors and go back 6 weeks later without making change, I'm going to be feeling the same. But if I go back 6 weeks later and I've been out for walks and I've started doing cold water therapy and I've started journaling each day and reflecting on each day, then you're probably going to be better. You're not going to be perfect, but because it takes time. That's addiction isn't something that's going to change overnight, but you can gradually work. And even if it starts with the smallest thing, you could do that, then build something else. And always encourage people to try and make that change, because it will change your life.
Absolutely. I think we see that in like the men's self-improvement space a lot, where it's like people are just watching videos about improving and then not actually implementing what they see in the video. So it's like this mental like easing of what the symptoms are. So you're like, oh, I'm watching something about getting better, so I feel better. But then you're not actually changing anything. And I think it's following along the same kind of thought process here.
I think telling yourself that you've got a gambling problem and reaffirming that, it kind of just, it naturally gets you down. Mm. Whereas telling someone, look, you've got a problem, it's not going to change overnight, but try this, try that. Things might improve. I'm not saying they will definitely improve, but I think actions create change.
Yeah, and knowing that things can improve is big, because I think a big part of people continuing to gamble is feeling like gambling is the only way out. And so if we're giving people examples of what life looks like after gambling that look appealing, that look like something people would want, that's a reason to not continue down that same path. You reach the point that the gambling is becoming overwhelming. It's leading to these negative emotions. Take me into the last night that you gambled. Take me to September 13th, 2023.
I gambled all day at my work. I'd done that all day, every day. I'd just sit at my desk and be checking bets, researching bets. At that point, I was gambling from the minute I woke up to the minute I went to sleep at night. So I'd actually been up during that day. I went home that night and I looked at what to bet on, and there wasn't much to bet on because it was late at night. I was back shift at my work. It was virtual cricket. Basically the cartoons, and I lost all the money that I was up, and I kind of sat there just thinking very suicidal thoughts. But this time they were actually real thoughts, like how can we do it here, eh? And because it was just a never ending cycle, and I didn't feel as if there was light at the end of the tunnel. Like I say, I listened to a podcast and it kind of gave me a wee bit of hope. I started thinking, just looking up to people and a good recovery. Like I say, seen your stuff on Instagram, and I was just like, can what? I just started thinking differently. So like I say, putting things in place, like I say, to do. I started journaling. I started downloading an app, recording my days that was off it. Every day wasn't easy. Like I still reflect on that first month, first 6 weeks, and there was a lot of days it was hard. And it's looking back at that and seeing how far I've come that kind of, it makes me feel good, because I stuck with it when a lot of the times I wouldn't stick with it. But I believed, I just, someone clicked with this time that I was doing the right thing. Started learning about dopamine. I started learning about how the brain worked, how we become addicted, how our subconscious mind works. These were things that I'd never been told before. And I didn't understand how that isn't the case, because we can rewire our brains through neuroplasticity. Like, I started doing it and I started seeing the benefits. People started commenting on how well I was doing, how honest I was being. And I knew myself I was being honest. I wasn't lying about anything, because I didn't need to, because everything was off my chest. Especially after I'd done the podcast telling my story, I was like, kind of would turn up to my football and everybody knew about my gambling. So if there was like raffle tickets going about, football cards going about, then they would know that I wouldn't do it. I would still give a fiver donation or a tenner donation, but I didn't want to win the bottle of vodka or the £50 or whatever, because I didn't need it.
Sure.
So I think having the conversations and being honest it just makes everything easy.
Yeah.
So I try and encourage people, look, dinna, like the football season starting again, and the soccer season, sorry, there'll be like fantasy football and can pick who you want to win the league. They sort of things go around the works. You have work syndicates and stuff, but they know not to ask me now. But somebody that's maybe got a gambling problem will feel that they didn't want to have that conversation. So that's why I try and encourage people, look, it's not a big deal. I could do anything I want in life apart from gamble. Why not be honest? If somebody thinks, what the fuck's, you know, gambling for? Sorry, I'm swearing. Why is he not gambling? I didn't need to reply to them. 99% of people support what you're doing. And that gives you comfort that you're doing the right thing.
Man, that's awesome. Congratulations on getting to the point where you're now going to be able to help other people recover from gambling addiction. And right before I ask you about what you're doing now and how you're going to accomplish that, you mentioned the subconscious mind. This is not a topic that's ever come up yet on the channel here, and I think it's a really interesting one. What have you learned about how the subconscious mind impacts problem gambling addiction?
So the subconscious mind, it takes up 95% of your thoughts. So when you're trying to beat addiction, gambling addiction, it's natural without the right controls in place that you always turn back to what you know. It's already stored in your mind. So that's why it's so hard to beat, because it's just so natural to always turn back to. It's like your comfort blanket that you're always going to turn to when things go tough. When you're frustrated, when you're angry, I would always turn to gambling. If I lost when I was playing a sport, I'd go down to the bookies or place a bet because I wanted that winning feeling. So I think using techniques to try and rewire your thought process gradually will change your subconscious mind, so you're no always turning to that as your comfort blanket. You've got other things in place that will give you that dopamine release.
That's very cool. And is that something that you talk about or will be talking about on the app that you're releasing? Tell me about that. Tell me about the book. Tell me like what you're doing now to help other people.
Aye, so there's an app getting released next month in August that'll be focused. It was initially going to be just addiction, but I believe it will help a lot of people in the mental health space and well-being. It focuses basically on accountability, taking action, and basically rewiring your brain through doing practices such as meditation, breathing techniques, journaling, tracking your finances. There'll be e-learning books, podcasts, AI software so that you could kind of speak to someone if you're feeling down. There's just loads and loads. It's kind of like a super app that has so many techniques that will help rewire your brain. It worked for me, so I really believe it'll work for other people.
That's awesome. And tell me about the book.
So it was about 10 months ago. I was kind of looking at ideas of what I could do to give people inspiration, because that's what I struggled with. I struggled looking up to somebody who was in a good recovery my whole time when I was trying to stop gambling. So I believe now I'm in a good recovery, so I could possibly give people inspiration that you can turn the corner. If people are in the same position that I was in, where they felt that they'd exhausted all avenues, I want to show people that you can do it. No matter what age you are, you could still do it with the right techniques. So my book basically gives an honest account of how much I struggled, who I let down, some of the bad things I've done. It's just a true reflection of a gambler. And obviously there's a bit in it at the end about how I've turned my life around, what I'm doing with Gambling Leap. Obviously helping my recovery as well, because it makes you feel good helping people. Also, I've been delivering quite a lot of awareness. I've got a presentation made up, which is really good. I really believe in it. And I've delivered it to workplaces, the NHS, schools, and I'm hoping to roll it out to more people, because obviously education, awareness and prevention was my main focus with Gambling Leap. So I believe that kids, the very least kids deserve, is an education on gambling or the potential harms that gambling could cause.
And I think that we're most qualified to help the people that we used to be. And even before that, right? So like, I think that what's super valuable about what you're doing is you're taking your experiences that could be seen as negatives or something that you'd want to push aside and using them as a teaching tool, a learning lesson to help other people who are going to go through a similar situation. And hopefully, based on, you know, how we categorize this video, everyone that's watching this video used to be a kid, is not a kid right now. But so it's really important that we get to people and we talk to them about the risks of something that they might end up doing, and based on the trend, are likely to end up doing, which is gambling, or at least sports betting. So before the call, we were also talking about the fact that within the space of education, awareness, and prevention, there are some companies out there that are doing good work, but carry certain limitations as to what they can accomplish. You want to dive into kind of what you've seen in the space in terms of where funding comes from and what kind of challenges that presents?
Yeah, well, obviously when I started, I had aims to try and get out to as many people. I wasn't actually aware as there was so much going on, or there's so many kind of charities out there, but my eyes were kind of opened as to where the funding was coming from, and a lot of the intentions, like say the Gambling Act 2005, when I hear people challenged why it's getting reviewed again, I just find that bonkers, because it clearly isn't fit for purpose. So I think a review was clearly needed, and the things they've implemented, such as the maximum stake on slots from £10 down to £5, I mean, it's ridiculous that a £5 stake could be put on a slot machine that could spin every two and a half to 3 seconds. I mean, you could lose £100 in a minute. How many people earn £100 an hour? Not many. Basically saying that that's okay for somebody to lose £100 a minute, which I just find that's ridiculous. I've bet these stakes before because I'm chasing. I've bet these stakes because I'm addicted. I've bet these stakes because I'm chasing money. Yeah. I've no bet these stakes because I'm enjoying spinning and losing £100 a minute.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. No. I'd be pretty certain that nearly everybody playing these stakes has got a problem.
I would think so. Or got loads of money,
but I think the latter's more likely.
Yeah, I definitely think the large majority of the people that are funding, that are providing the revenues for the casinos, are either gambling addicts or developing a gambling problem to some extent. And, you know, the reason I asked this question was because I've been working on a piece myself, which would have been out for about a month and a half or 2 months when we air this, where I was talking about where the funding comes from for help for gambling addicts, at least in America. And most of the funding is either tethered directly to the revenues that casinos generate, or casinos directly sponsor some of these efforts. There's some danger in that the people that are making the decisions politically are kind of incentivized to create a problem so that they can look like they're solving it. And do you see that as well over in Scotland?
Aye, so the talk, the majority of the talks that I've done have been free of charge, which obviously I know that it isn't sustainable to keep doing that, but I want to kind of build my profile and my trust. I want to be in a position where if funding's possibly available, then I could show what work I've done, and I've put a lot of money in my own pocket, or pulled a lot of money out of my own pocket to build the brand that I've got, and I believe in it a lot. And I believe if I need to stay in my own lane, I will, because I believe in it so much. I'm still as passionate about creating awareness as I was over a year ago, and it's something that I didn't know would happen. I thought it might have dwindled, but I'm still, if not more passionate about it, and I want change, and I believe if we all pull together, change will happen. It won't happen overnight, but it will happen.
Well, to everyone that's listening, check out the link in the description to find out more about Colin's book and his app. And if anyone wants to hear another story of someone in recovery from a gambling addiction, then check out this video next. Let's keep getting better together, one day at a time.